Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
We're continuing a series called Trigger Words. And a trigger word can bring you to a totally different space, a time that maybe happened when you're younger or you're a kid. And those can be words, those can be pictures, those can be like a building. Imagine this, that maybe you're driving by and you see a church, and if you had a negative experience with a church, which is probably about 100% of us in this room, right? It might bring some feelings up. Maybe it wasn't even that church, just a church in and of itself. And how can those things have influence over us? Like the trigger words can lead you to positive places. Like there was, when I hear the word Danny, when Nikki and I in 2001, I think we were camp counselors, and the camp we were part of, it was great. We would take 6th and 7th graders. We'd bike 80 miles. We would horse ride. We'd canoe 10 miles. It was like supposed to be like extreme camping for Jesus kind of camp, right? You have to say it like that. And there was this one girl, and her name was Danny, and she had moxie. She had strength. She had sass. And that week, that student really won my heart. And the reason that I remember that word Danny brings me to this place of one of the reasons why I'm still in ministry, why I'm still a pastor, is at the end of that week, we were around a campfire and we'd play some worship music and we'd talk about Jesus. And I still remember around that fire, Danny just like bawling. Ooh, I'm even getting the feels, right? She's bawling. And it was like one of the first times I saw like a student have like their life and Jesus just meet so radically. And so when I hear Danny, I think about that tiny little girl, Danny, full of moxie. You can even smells can trigger things, right? Right? Where am I going with this? I walked into the Carlton greenhouse for the first time in, I don't know, dozens of years. Dozens of years? No, I'm not that old, right? Maybe like a couple decades, right? One dozen. And I walked in to get something for my wife. And as soon as I breathed in, and it brought me back to when I was like 5 years old, and I'd be running underneath the tables, and my mom would whisper, yell at me, because moms are good at that. I can't stop that right now. Right? So no one knows that you actually yell at your kids. it's funny. So the reason we're talking about trigger words is that regardless if you've been part of a church for like today, or maybe you've been part of a church tradition for a long time, there's words that hold power, both positive and negative. And especially if it's negative, we will distance ourselves from not just that word, for whatever meaning we attach to that word. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the word evangelism, right? If I walked up to you around dinner table, I'm like, hey, let's go evangelize, right? There's probably not a lot of us who are like, yeah, great idea, Chris, right? But because why do we associate something negative to that? Or we let someone else do it is because what was modeled or what was told or our experience of it. And these words, we're going on for a couple more weeks, these words mean something beautiful. These words invite us into a different way of seeing the divine, a different way of experiencing our life, and really helping shape a culture, shaping a community that we can thrive in. And so like, I want to like reclaim some of these words. And today we're talking about, this one's going to give you, you're going to stand up and boo, right? Is discipleship. I'm joking. You're not going to, hopefully you're not going to boo that. But discipleship, why is that a trigger word? Because it's a word if in churches, like, oh, we got to go disciple people. It's like, what does that mean? And usually when we think of discipleship, we're like, yeah, that's why we pay other people to do it professionally, right? Like, do I have to disciple people? No. That's why we got Nikki over there. So I want to talk about what does it actually look like. And where we start is in the Great Commission. Jesus lived this beautiful life. And spoiler alert, he dies, right? He gets killed. 3 days later, more spoiler alert, he comes back to life. And for 40 days, he's walking and he's reteaching everything that he knows about this good and beautiful God. He taught it once, he comes back and he goes over it all again and to all these people. And right before he ascends, spoiler alert, he goes into heaven, he's at this mountain, right? And he gives these instructions, which traditionally we call the Great Commission. In Matthew 28, this is what it says. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, into the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, always to the end of the age. So Jesus tells them, go and disciple all nations. And Jesus is really good at this. Like, he's really good at, like, mind-blowing people with, like, these truths. And right before he's going up into heaven, he stops and says, hey, I'm going to give you a mandate. This is not like a, hey, let me throw some on you, see how it feels while you're watching When They See Us on Netflix. It's a great show, right? Do you think maybe in between your push-ups and that show, just think about it maybe, I don't know, maybe disciple people? He says, disciple all nations. And not just like, hey, disciple people who look like you, disciple people who you're already friends with, disciple people who vote like you, disciple people just in Carlton County. Jesus standing there as a brown Middle Eastern man saying, hey, we're going to go into all the world, like everywhere, and you're going to disciple them. And what does discipleship look like? He says, oh, great, sweet. You're going to baptize them. That's what we're doing today, right? We're going to baptize them. Oh, and then also teach them how to do every single thing I've ever taught you how to do. Right? Sounds easy enough. If you were sitting there, you'd probably be like, there's a little bit of pressure here, Jesus. Come on. All right? Come on. Settle down. Like, I don't like being told what to do. Right? So let's, like, work this out. Jesus doesn't give any wiggle room. And so if you're like me, right? And I've been doing this pastoring thing for 15, 16, dozens and dozens and dozens of years. Yeah, clearly. And this word can still to this day be a trigger word for me because I have in my mind what discipleship looks like has to fit into this rigid box. So when I was writing this, I thought of maybe you're here and you hear the word disciple, like you are supposed to go disciple, not just like someone else, but Jesus, you. It's like everyone. Some things might pop in your head. First one is this. That's great, Jesus, but I'm not you. actually, I'm a hot mess most of the time. And we think, I can't teach someone, right? Because the actual definition of disciple is simply student. Like, we're all disciples of something, right? So to be a disciple of Jesus means I'm a student of Jesus. And to what discipleship is then is that we're going to go out and actually just teach people what it looks like to be a part of the divine, experience the kingdom of God. But for a lot of us, when we think about going to go, quote unquote, do that, we're like, I don't do that because I am a mess, because I'm not perfect. When I invite people up to come up and pray for people, like join our prayer ministry team, the number one response I get is like, whoa. You don't want me praying for anyone, all right? Because whatever's happening here, what if that accident gets out in them and then I'm responsible for them? And we will move away from doing things in a spiritual rhythm because we think I'm not perfect. And we equate that we are good enough to do things when we are perfect. And we hear the words like Jesus says, hey, be perfect in the same way my Father is perfect, right? Those are really encouraging words because we mess up all the time, right? And they're like, hey, just be perfect like God. Jesus is saying this. Like, it's an easy thing. And so we usually skip over that verse and we distance ourselves because we really aren't perfect and we feel bad about it. And what most Christians do is that we pretend that we're perfect. We pretend we're better than we really are so that we're included. Why? Because we're excluded if we aren't perfect. So you play this whole weird church spiritual game. Everyone's like, I'm perfect. I'm blessed all the time. Can't stop, won't stop, right? Instead of just saying, I don't know what's going on, right? And we do that to protect ourselves. But when Jesus says, be perfect in the same way my Father is perfect, perfection is not a lack of something. To be perfect like God is perfect means this, that God shows up. Perfect means God always loves. Perfect is not just you check all these boxes. Perfect is that we choose love, we choose to include, we choose to behave in like a God-like behavior, which for God so loved the world that he gave. That's what Jesus is talking about. He's not setting us up for some impossible goal. He's saying, what if you include and what if you love? Like, be like my Father, who loves perfectly, who gives of himself, who gives over and over and over. So discipleship then might not be the scary thing of I have to make sure that Alana knows every single perfect thing because I am perfect. It's like I can just show up. So then it's not a lack of something, but a fullness of something. Second thing, well, if Jesus discipled people, I don't know how comfortable I feel about asking 12 people to leave behind their families and say, now follow me and become fishermen of men, right? That's a joke. No one's going to do that. But, right, so moving on, next one. The third one is then, I don't have all the answers, which is very similar to the perfect part. What if, like, if you're going to teach someone how to change the oil in the car, right? If Josh is going to teach someone how to change the oil, Josh is an expert at cars. He really knows all the answers, and we want him to have the answers. Because if he's like, if you don't have oil, just throw in some ice cream, right? That would be me. That's what I would say, right? But when someone says, hey, how do I connect with a God that I can't see? And I actually feel really guilty that I don't love as much, I don't love God as much as I think I should. All right? How do you respond? I'll tell you the response. Go talk to Nikki. That's what I tell people, all right? Go talk to the real pastor. Go talk to Nikki, all right? But honestly, we will avoid even engaging in those conversations because we're afraid of what could come at us. Again, same thing. If I don't know something, does that mean I'm bad? Like verse 17, what we just read, it said, all these people showed up. There's 11 disciples and a whole lot of other people, men and women. They're showing up, and they said they came and they worshiped. Is that up there? Yeah, verse 17, right? It says, when they saw him, they worshiped him. But look at the next line. But some doubted. And really, we've changed the Bible because really what should have happened is some doubted, and then God sent big crows to come down and eat those people who doubted because they're evil human beings, right? That's what we kind of think. If I doubt, I'm out. Ooh, that should be a t-shirt, all right? I like that. If I doubt, I'm out. All right, so if I win, I'm in. I'm processing my t-shirt business right now. But we treat uncertainty in our faith like it's a disease. Like if you are here on a spiritual journey and you're at this place of where you're finally secure enough to ask questions about the Bible, where you feel safe enough to say, okay, I'm going to stop pretending like this violence in the Bible is just okay. You should ask, why did God kill all the babies and kids and cattle and men and women? Why? That's not normal, right? But we feel like if we ask those questions, the response I get most of the time when I start saying, what about this? People say, well, that's a slippery slope. As if we slide off something we're never, maybe we're not meant to be on that ledge. Right? And there's freedom. And here we see all throughout the Bible to disciple people, friends. Right? And I'm going to talk about what that looks like and how we do it, but I want to give you on the front end. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have all the answers. The people I've learned from the most are the people saying, I don't know. Because I don't feel like I'm alone. Right? I don't feel like I'm alone. So to my friends who are out there on this spiritual journey and you're seeking and you're whatever words you're using, as you guys go into college, it is okay to question. It's okay to question because God is big enough and this God loves you more than you could ever imagine. So if we are going to take those off the table, then what does it actually mean to disciple? What if we can actually do this, right? And like do it together. What could we do? Well, we're going to look in 1 Corinthians where this guy named Paul. Paul says this, 1 Corinthians 3. All things are yours. Okay, I already got to stop. All things are yours. This word comes up over and over and over and over in the life of Jesus. We see it in the Old Testament. We see it now Paul using it. There's like this language consistently saying, not just some of this is yours. Hey, part of this is yours. Hey, if you try hard enough and you're good enough and you don't ask those questions, then this might be yours. Jesus says over and over and over again, all of this is yours. He even says, you're going to do greater and bigger things than I am doing. Jesus said that. So whatever is going to happen next, Paul is telling these people that he loves. And what they're about to get into is there's a big fight in the church of saying, I only listen to Chris Sauter. And the other people are like, well, I only listen to Nikki Sauter. And I'd say, you're right. And then other people say, the real pastor, the real way we lead is when Dano Sauter, right? That's my brother, right? That's the real one, said no one ever. So, and that's what they have this fight about different leaders. And Paul's addressing it, and he says, stop. Everything this God has is yours, right? And what comes next? Then he tells them how we can actually go about learning this. This is discipleship. He's telling us, all things are yours, whether Paul, Apollos, or Cephas, that could be Chris, Nikki, and Dano, or the world, or life or death, or present or the future, it's all yours. And you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. Love that. All of this is yours. What he's saying here is, no matter what leader you're talking to, no matter if it's Chris, Dano, or Nikki, all of it's yours. You can learn from all of them. It doesn't matter if it's in the past. It doesn't matter if it's in the future. It doesn't matter if you're alive. And he even throws in death, which is interesting, but he's like trying to cover everything, right? And he says, the entire world. That means everywhere you go, friends, everywhere you go, class is in session. You can learn, you can see the divine, you can see the Christ, you can see and experience heaven everywhere you go. There's an opportunity to connect with the divine, to connect with God, to have your mind blown, not just in a great auditorium, not just with someone who looks like you. You can imagine this, you can learn something about God from someone who's picketing the very thing that you love. Imagine this. You quite possibly could learn from someone who believes something different than you. You might even be able to learn from someone who's younger than you or older than you, who worships differently than you, who expresses themselves differently than you. And what we most often do is we say, oh, that's fine in the workplace. Professionally, we can do that, right? But when it comes to my spirituality, we usually run from diverse views. We feel like we have to protect it as if it's something that could be lost. And what I'm saying, what this God does, if we don't have to be perfect the way God's perfect by loving and including. What if you could walk down the aisle at Super One, right? Like there's no aisles in Subway, right? You get that? If you could walk down the aisle and people you run to, you could learn about God. Through the way they talk, through the way they love, through the way they talk about their spouse, through the way that they spend their money. Like, we can learn everywhere we go. So everything I'm going to say, like, this is the umbrella. There's always a chance to grow. There's always a chance, an opportunity. And it does not have to look like putting on my hat and saying, all right, kids, it's discipleship time. Yay! Right? And then it's like, once that class is done, I'm like, now I'm going back, do whatever I want. Like, to me, discipleship is because this is what I do, right? This is what we do. The way that I do it in my job is gonna be different. But if I wasn't who I was up here, if I was different down there and I was up here, you should run from this church, right? Because what this is saying is every second of the day, we get to learn from one another. And I'm learning from, I hope you're learning from me, right? I hope you are, right? But I'm watching, I'm learning from you as well. So then how can we actually disciple then? Because this is like a great idea, it's a great premise. How can we actually disciple? The first thing is this, is that you have to be one first. If you want to, quote unquote, disciple the people around you, you have to be a disciple. You have to learn. I don't know if there's anyone else out there but like loves to learn. I'm like a learn junkie. That's why I love the news. It's why I love reading. I love podcasts. I love to learn. And my encouragement to you is, and maybe you don't like to read, maybe you don't like podcasts, maybe you just like run away from politics, that's fine. Like if you need to get out into the woods, if you have to be at a table with someone, if you have to, like wherever you're at, like become a lifelong learner. Like just like lean into it just a little bit more. And here's something that someone challenged me, right? Is learn and or read or listen or watch people who are different from you. And I said this earlier, but I share this story all the time, but I took a picture of books I was reading at the coffee shop, and my friend Ellen Caldor said, "Wow, Chris, those are all white men, all those authors." I started going through my library, and it was honestly 95% were all men, right? And the other 5% were men of color. I barely had any women authors. And I am a big fan of women, right? There's a lot of women in my life that are speaking to me and challenging me. But I realized when I went to go learn in this context, it was from the same kind of people. Like, find different voices. Find different authors. There's something beautiful about learning from people who are different than us, who are on the margins. Find indigenous authors. Find different artists. Find different podcasts. We have this thing called the internet. Opens up the world to us, right? But let me just encourage you something. One thing John Wimber, who helped start the Vineyard, he said, is eat the chicken, spit out the bones. You ever hear, no? You're like, nope, I'm not doing that. I'm eating the whole chicken and the bones. That's what you're saying, right? Eat the chicken and spit out the bones means this. When you go to learn from different people, you read different people, you should disagree with some of the things that they say, right? If everything you're reading or hearing or listening, you're just 100%, yep, then you're just doing what I love to do, slap my own back, right? Like, find someone different. And when you find someone that you don't necessarily believe, you don't really agree with, you have two options. You can either hate that person, damn it, right? I would not do that one, all right? Or you can bless and love and let that person be that person, right? You could turn off that podcast and say, wow, I've never thought about God that way, man, I don't know if that's for me, right? It is a safe place. If the whole world we can learn, that means even when there's bad ideas, maybe when there's different theology, maybe in bad theology, you're okay. God's okay. So take a risk in what you are learning. Learn more. Second thing, obviously, then, is if we're going to learn, is start doing algebra, right? I know that's exactly where you thought I was going. Do algebra. Do you remember being a kid? And if there's any math teachers here, you're going to get a big amen for this. Looking at your math teacher during algebra or trigonometry or something like, we're never going to have to use this in real life, teacher. Right? Anyone say that before? Why am I doing this, right? And I remember saying that, and in my little red house, we were putting down some tile, and my friend was over, and he's like, hey, we're going to have to make like a right cut, or I don't remember, right? But I remember, I'm like, how in the world are we going to figure out exactly what it is? Can't we just like look at it, and like, I think it's good, right? And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, let's just eyeball it. He's like, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And all of a sudden, I'm like, Mick Balo taught me that, right? Right? It's all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I can hear Mick just like, solder. What I mean is this. When you go to learn, we should be learning. Grow. Like me, I realized I like to learn so much that I just like to go learn. And then it's like, breathe. Learn. And I rarely take time to actually apply what I'm learning. Right? It's like I get this, all this joy of learning and thinking, and then I'm like, oh, that's great, and then go on the next thing, learning and thinking, without actually stopping saying, oh, maybe I should actually practice this. And you hear me use the word a lot. I remember, man, 5-6 years ago, of reading these, of reading the Gospels and then reading other people like The Divine Conspiracy. Right? Great book. And reading these books where it's talking about what the way Jesus included people was radical. John Wimber talked about this. And for whatever that time and space in my life, I was like, I finally saw it. Of like how Jesus went to this Syrian woman who came up and Jesus called her a dog. Get away from your dog. Like, that's a racist comment. Right? Jesus is saying this. And I remember and like, oh, what is going on here? And the woman stands up, yet she persisted. She stands up and says, even the dogs need scraps. And Jesus says, now your daughter's going to get healed. It's like, she was excluded. There's a lot of different theories on that, right? We're not going to get on that. But she was absolutely excluded, and she stood up for herself. And all of a sudden, Jesus says, whoa, wait, yeah, you're included. about the woman at the well. Like, that should never happen for a woman. And then Jesus, a rabbi of all people, coming and sitting alone with him, it shouldn't happen. Why? Jesus included. Sick people coming up and touching Jesus shouldn't happen. Why? Sick people are bad. We put them in the corner. They're excluded. Jesus says, you're included. And I'm reading through these. I'm like, holy buckets. This inclusion of this God is crazy. So I looked at my calendar. I looked again at my authors. I looked at the people that I spend time with, like where I go to parties. Like, ooh, everyone's just like me, which is not bad. I shouldn't say that. Because people like you are not bad. I just realized that, is there anyone that I'm excluding, intentionally or unintentionally? And I actually had to take from my learning and actually say, okay, where am I going? What parties am I going to go to? What people am I going to invite over for dinner? Like, who am I going to go have a good time with? Who am I going to learn with? And I had to, on purpose, look to include people. That maybe, I wouldn't say that I exclude on a purpose, but in a way I did. So what I'm saying is this, learn, then actually do it. Because a disciple is a student. A student is someone who's learning. A student is someone who's doing it. And lastly is live your best life. And this is my favorite part, man. Live your best life. When we treat discipleship as you have to be an expert and you can never be wrong, which leads you to not doing it, if you say everywhere we go in this world is an opportunity to experience the divine and learn from the divine and learn from each other and learn from the ground, then that gives you permission to live your best life. And what I mean is this. Include people, not just in your home where it's perfect. Let people see, like, that one room where you just shoved everything in 5 minutes before everyone walked up. Right? Anyone else do that? That's our bedroom is just like, oh, people are over, throw it in the bedroom, right? And we get in, we're like, hold on, why is all this stuff in here? Why are all these rain jackets in here? So I'm talking as if we own dozens of rain jackets. We don't. Why am I talking about rain jackets? Live your best life of when we live an Instagram, like, filtered kind of life where we're just projecting all the perfect things. Like, what if people got to know the real you? The real you who, like, cries at Hallmark commercials. Me, all right? The real you who can be a really great parent, but then can be a horrible parent. Me. Like, I still remember listening to this one speaker and talking about this fight he got with one of his kids and said some things he didn't like. I don't know if I should be saying this on stage. But anyways, right? I felt like when he was being honest and vulnerable in that moment, and I finally felt like I thought I was the only one. You ever been there before? Someone is brave, someone is radical, and they're vulnerable. This is Brené Brown, right? They take the risk to do that. They enter into the place as themselves, and they speak and they share, and all of a sudden you're like, it hits you in a spot of like, I'm not alone. Like, what would that look like for your neighbors? If you have children, what would that look like for your kids to see the real you? What would it look like for the church? If we could show up and be honest and pursue a good and beautiful life and actually do it. Because when we can be us and the whole world's an opportunity, we don't need to be perfect and we don't have to all answers. Like, Vernita Jane Davis is enough exactly who she is. Nita is deeply loved by God, not for doing anything more than just being Nita Davis. And when you have that permission, then discipleship is just sharing your story. It is living your life, including the people around you. And I could tell you this. I am who I am today because people like you have invited me to their table. People like you have accepted me. And if we could do this together, the thing I hear most about this church, other than how funny and articulate I am, I love laughing at my own jokes. And number two is people say, I feel like I'm at home. I don't know what it is. I feel at home. And you feel at home when you can be yourself. So here's my invitation before we go to baptisms. Anyone's getting baptized, this is where you start getting a little nervous. Like, oh, did I make the right decision? So, did we tell people that we are doing spontaneous baptisms as well? Oh, good. Thank you. I have to finish my message, but pause, all right? Spontaneous baptism. So if you're here and you'd like to get baptized, and it's something you've heard about, you maybe been around for a little bit, you're like, oh, I never know when to sign up, and you're here and you're like, you know what, I do want to get baptized. We would love to baptize you. And we have clothes that you can change, or you wear your clothes, and we have clothes you can change into privately somewhere else, right? So that if you're here, I want to get baptized, but I didn't bring my swimsuit, we have a change of clothes for you, and you guess what, you get to keep them, you're welcome. So if that's you, when we invite people up, just come on up as well. The only thing we ask is that if you're a student, that you have talked about this with your parents, because like that's a big deal as a family, and we wouldn't want you to get a phone call from your parents like, hey, thanks for baptizing my kid. He's 7 and we didn't know and we weren't there. Sorry. Right? So that's the only thing that we ask. Ending my message. Okay. So here's where I want to end. I said that already because then we're going to baptize you and you get nervous. Is that we can do this. And I'd say we are doing this. But what if we like got a little more intentional, got a little bit more aware of saying, all right, who can I include? Where am I going to read? Who's going to be at my table? And here's, if there's any fear in that, Paul says, all things are yours. Jesus, the end of the Great Commission, says, I am with you always. You are going to screw it up, right? Yeah, you should probably hear that more. Yeah, you're going to screw it up. You're going to fail. I will and have and will continue to screw up and fail in this whole discipleship thing, this whole living a good and beautiful life thing. But I can tell you, friends, God is not up in heaven with his arms crossed, rolling his eyes, going, Sodder, come on, catch up. He is with you always. And if you have that truth, the whole world, we can move with God, and this God deeply loves us. You never, ever lose.